When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. And today's episode is just a delight. It really is. I sent my guest a message literally 3 or 4 days ago on the off chance he might read it, and he read it and he responded, and then I got a phone call out of the blue, which we talk about at the beginning, which was startling and hilarious, and it all just went into the pot to speak to an absolute delightful person about their passion of records, and that passion is... Yeah, it's unquestionable, and you're about to hear that chat. It's Tony Pitts, and yeah, you're in for a treat. We talk about lots of the stuff that Tony's done over the years, but most of it is based around the records that have been key to that. We, of course, talk about the film Funny Car, which stars Paddy Considine and Maxine Peake, and he's put together musically by Richard Hawley. And we talk about all of this, and it's an absolutely lovely chat, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Before we get that chat underway, a few thank yous. I guess firstly, thank you to Tony, and then thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. And thank you, 76, for producing my podcast during these strange times when it all has to be done over Zoom. And so thanks for ensuring that people get a nice... warm sounding podcast to listen to. If this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then once you get to the end of today's episode, why not go and explore the back catalogue? There's 300 or so episodes available now for free, and you can hear me talking to the aforementioned Maxine Peake, which is an incredible episode. I can't recommend that one enough as well. You can hear me talking to other actors such as Amanda Abington, Michael Smiley. There's loads. If you're into your music, then I've spoke to a big old whack of amazing artists that you can go and enjoy the chats I have with them. So yeah, I'm not going to rattle them all off because I try not to do that, and I've been doing it for the last God knows how many weeks. So yeah, just go and have a look, and I'm sure you'll find something you'll enjoy. If you'd like to support the podcast, then you can do that by telling your mates that it's all right. You can give us a follow on the social medias, or drop us a little comment or a share. And I have a Patreon as well, which is like a little social media type account where you just sign up for 79p a month, and then I'll give you another episode each week over on there. And yeah, video episodes, and put together little radio shows and stuff. I play records and talk about them as well. And yeah, so, you know, if you'd like to support the podcast that way, then you can do that at Patreon. That's patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. But you can find out about everything you need to know about the back catalogue and the Patreon and everything else at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Okay, that's the average waffle done. We're going to get over to some really lovely, engaging, passionate music chat now. So please enjoy today's episode with the wonderful Tony Pitts. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beat and Track Podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out, www.hotelchocolat.com or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin. Okay, we are recording. Joining me today, Tony Pitts. How you doing?
I'm all right, thanks, Stu. Well, I was just saying to you before, turmoil. absolute turmoil. I don't usually do podcasts, but I was it's a push and a pull. I was pulled in by there because I think music is the highest form of expression. I think it's been the greatest passion of my life. I think a lot of things about music. And then once I'd committed to doing this with you, I realised I've only had 48 hours to think about it, and 47 of them have been spent writing lists and putting them in the bin. It's the sins of omission, right? It's the ones that I'm not putting in.
Yeah,
and also that idea of I've always found the idea of giving prizes for any kind of art ludicrous. So artistic merits. I mean, how do you by what criteria would you pick one song over another?
Impossible. It is impossible. And you know, I think we can understand that on any given day, it could be one of any other 100 songs. And I think when you phoned me the other day, I didn't recognise the number, obviously. And I was just met with this voice just going, fucking horrendous. And I was thinking, yeah, who's this?
That's one of my many alarming character traits that I tend to start in the middle of. It might have been a low, my name's Tony things, but yeah. It's fucking horrendous. And you said on any given day, but I'm more at the mercy of the winds than that. It's on any given hour. So I've just spent the last half an hour doing bits and pieces and then just sort of trawling through, going down rabbit holes of different genres of music. And anyway, we're here now. So I think I've committed to a list of songs and they all have huge significance to me.
Okay. Well, let's start the playlist. And for track one, Tony, I'm going to ask you please to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
Okay. So I'll just tell you what it is and then we'll do all that. So I picked The Lark Ascending by Vaughan Williams.
Yep.
Because I think it's a lyrical evocation of this country, not even necessarily an idealised, but I was brought up in Sheffield and my grandma died when I was around 10, so we moved as a family from a rather less salubrious area to posh Sheffield. So those formative years were spent in a place called Rivlin, so we sort of lived in a semi-rural location, and I was woken every morning by birdsong and spent my days running through the woods. And I'd that sense of the numinous and the wonder of the the surge of the green surge of summer and stuff. And so that Vaughan Williams, the Lark Ascending, immediately takes me there. It'll have different connotations for other people, I'm sure, but that's why I picked that particular thing. I think I don't know what your other guests have found, but intro, I mean, that was just, I just didn't know where to begin.
It's really strange, isn't it? Because some people go for something quite long and, you know, it's a journey to get to the payoff, whereas yes. some people are just like, no, fuck it, Hard Day's Night or Help.
Mate. Yeah, Hard Day's Night, straight in. I was toying with Stevie Wonder, Don't You Worry About a Thing. But you see, now, but let's just celebrate Vaughan Williams.
I've never had a guest. I've had over 300 guests on here, Tony, and I've never seen anyone so uncomfortable with actually naming the one just because it's at the detriment of something else.
And I understand they're not mutually exclusive, and I think the two ways that I'd introduce myself to people, rather, because I've got I think it's fair to say I've got a strong personality, so I'm not to everybody's taste, including myself. And I think that I've, because of the time and the place that I grew up, I put on a lot of armour, because I think I should actually look like one of the Bronte sisters, but I've covered myself in tattoos and muscles to disguise myself. So I think the two ways to introduce myself, who I feel I really am in my internal life, would be by writing and the music that I love. So that's why I think it's such turmoil, because I think the biggest fear I've got is misrepresentation. Anyway, so yes.
And in those early years of moving and things like that, was there records on at home?
Yeah, but I thought about that. It's yes, there were. So I was born in 1962. My mum had me when she was 17, so my dad was 20, so I had young parents. So I grew up, I was a child of the 60s and then a youth of the 70s and stuff. So record player, Beatles, all the Beatles, mono and then stereo, Four Tops, the Stones, Rolling Stones. When I think of my mum and dad, I don't think of them as being big, certainly not having the same musical love music that I do, but that's probably not true. I think there was music in the house. I'm the oldest of three boys, but there's a big gap between the third one. So it was me and my brother Mark. And yeah, I think that's formative memories, me and him with the record player in the front room. And we put stuff on. And I don't know if it was dancing or fighting. I think it was dance fighting is what we'd do.
Yeah.
And I'd also often make up stories or company, whatever. Whatever we were dance fighting to. So, yeah, there was music in the house. Yeah, there was. And then by the time I could buy records, by the time I realised, I mean, that was such a fucking epiphany. I think when you get a pedal bike, that gives you that sense of freedom that it's undreamt of, that you can actually move. But then when I realised that the music that I was hearing on the radio I could go and own.
Yeah.
Which is the dreadful old man in me, but I've got that thing of it's not the same now. It's not the same as actually going and getting. That going and getting that the music that you've heard and loved was I loved all the ritual. I loved the whole thing. I loved the bus journey down to Hillsborough to get this or ordering stuff and waiting for it to come in and then saving up and then that getting home with it, that febrile fucking, I couldn't wait for the bus. I'd leg it back home to put it on. And I'm one of those, and I'm 59, I've never lost it. If I like a piece of music, I play the arse out of it. Yeah, back to the point where people say, are you, I suspect there are other issues involved, but
But do you know what? It's one of the other things that's definitely presented itself in the time I've been doing this podcast is that constant question of like, it was better back in the day, and you don't want to sound like the miserable old dude. And I've done it in so many ways, shapes, or form. But one of the things that comes across is the value that people put on the journey. The amount of people that have gone, I remember getting on the bus with that Jam record, and I got home and I put it on and I stared at the cover, put it on again, read every possible note on that cover.
Because music is a kind of secret. It's kind of like the most, I think poetry is the other thing that touches it. I used to hear music and think, how the fuck do they know that?
Yeah.
How the fuck do they know that I can hear that and see that? And I think that's probably true in life in anything that you've got to do something for has more value.
Yeah.
For sure. And also, I resisted. I try to resist the old man in, but we lived in a life. I grew up in a world with a lot less choice. There were a lot less diversions. So three channels on the TV and the music and reading. So so music and reading have been the things that I've placed the biggest value on. I think, yeah.
Well, let's go back to them formative years then. And for track two, I'm going to ask you to tell me the first song that you remember hearing, please, Tony, that had an emotional impact on you.
Pieces. Well, okay. Well, before I tell you, I'm going to tell you just to define the emotional impact, because there's all sorts of different emotions. And when we think of an emotional landscape, we think of the melancholy, which I've always been drawn to. But I also remember the emotion of the Disney films, like The Elephant March and Jungle Book and that stuff. That stirred something in me and I think that's a commonality with all musical of it's music that can make me feel something that I wasn't necessarily feeling before. So the song that had the most emotional impact on me was Pieces of a Man by Gil Scott-Heron.
What a record.
That I heard as a child, and I've got tattooed on my chest. It's the name of my company as well, Pieces of Man. So that's been with me, it feels like, all my life.
Yeah.
At the time, I'm sure you know the track, but it's about Gil Scott-Heron's father losing his job. Being made redundant and being emasculated by that and stuff. And I sort of, my father was a steel worker. My dad's still around, but was a steel worker in Sheffield at the time. And so I heard the song before I saw it in the flesh. But it was just something so, and it's, I mean, as I said, this is a 50-year journey I've had with that track.
Yeah.
Put it on now. I'm not stoned, I've not had a drink, I've just been fizzing about my day. If I put that on now, my shoulders are waterfall for my tears.
Yeah.
Just get every time it gets me. Every time. And so it's I'll go a year without listening to it. You know, sometimes maybe I've gone a couple of years without listening to it, and then I'll put it on and I'm right back there. Yeah. I was trying to think. I think there was no point lying for the sake of tidiness. I can't actually remember the facts of the first time I heard it. It must have been, I suspect, I've got a feeling that I was, my babysitter played it on our record player. And then, but I remember that I've got to get that. I've got to have that.
Yeah,
I've got to have that near me.
Yeah,
yeah. So yeah, Pieces of a Man.
Oh, just an incredible, incredible record. And the first guest I ever had on this podcast was a musician and poet called Scroobius Pip.
Yes,
and he chose this. And as well.
Well, God bless him. But okay. So here's my contention. I don't know him. my contention is, if he loves, if they pick that song, and he's, we're going to be all right. Yeah. I reckon we're going to be all right.
The absolutely.
There can't be that fucking wide, because if he's got that in him, then we're going to be all right.
Yeah. You mentioned melancholy, and
yes,
and so if you wake up, Tony, and you're having a low day, you're feeling a bit blue, do you immerse and process that emotion with music, or do you reach for something joyous to try and kind of...
No, I don't. I'm afraid it's a particularly English disease, isn't it? I will engender the melancholy. I think it's probably my default setting, because the melancholy is not misery, is it? Melancholy is a kind of... I wrote a film called Funny Cow for Maxine Peake, and there's a line in there: life's always been too much for me, too much and not enough all at the same time. And that's where the melancholy of music is. So I know if I feel things, and I want to feel things, and I don't I think if false jollity or that sort of nonsense, that doesn't work. And I think then equally if I'm giddy, I'll have a giddy half hour of music. Yeah. I'll go with that, and that's particularly so I'm filming up in Yorkshire at the moment, so I've been driving over the North Yorkshire moors with the tunes on my car. God, I can't think of anything better.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I literally can't think of anything I'd rather do. Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that film a little bit later. What a fucking magnificent film that is, mate. It absolutely knocked me sideways when I saw that. And I was absolutely thrilled I got to speak to Maxine on this podcast as well.
Thank you.
Wonderful film. Like I say, we'll pick up on that a little bit.
She's not bad at the acting, huh?
Not bad at all. Going to stay in the formative years for track three, and I'm going to ask you, please, for the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Well, now here's a terrible admission. I could feel this marching towards me the minute we start the call. I can't remember what I settled on with you. What did I settle on?
Can you
remember?
God,
this is a...
Right, you changed this last minute. So when we spoke this morning...
Oh, Waiting for the Man.
You went Velvet.
Yeah, Waiting for the Man. Okay, so the school... The difficulty I had with the school days one is the fucking tumble dryer of those years. I mean, and I wasn't... So Jim Moyer's a dear, dear friend of mine, Vic Rees, and Jim and I have a shared love of music, and also have this shared experience of I fucking loved disco, and I loved punk, and I loved anything that made me feel anything. So when it was coming to picking from my school days, and it is ego, and it is terrible, I thought, well, if I say, I don't know, Heroes by Bowie, I think, well, is that too... and because I've always been a bit of a dancer. I've always loved to dance. I had a jazz funk dance group, so I'd do that, and then I'd be down at the Limit in Sheffield, with Jarvis there and Richard Hawley and that. So I had that in me. So, and I picked Waiting for the Man just because it's still so vibrant in my mind. It still does that thing to me. It's still... But I don't, at that point, little naive at 12 or 30, not quite sure what I was listening to the story of, but... Yeah. That incessant, that. And then New York's my favourite town, and I try to get there whenever I can get there. That's also the soundtrack of New York to me.
Totally.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
How was school?
For them or for me?
Both. Let's go out. Well,
for me, an absolute fucking delight. But for everybody else involved in any supervisory capacity, or, you see, I could not stand lazy disruption. I used to think, oh, I have some fucking creativity about your disruption. I'm a natural disruptor. That's remained. And I don't think with malice, I just couldn't believe that we were doing what we were doing. I just think, well, why are we fucking doing this, God? I just can't think, is anybody else not think how the idea of being alive and that things be this is really happening was enough for me. Yeah. I didn't need any 2+2. My school days were, and that's continued. I had I think there was a large body of opinion against me, probably quite rightly. But then I had the people that I loved and loved me back we were committed to. So, yeah, I'd do, what would I do? I don't know. I ran a really quite successful bingo. but that went through the day from lesson to lesson. So, you know, house and line would be called in the middle of the class.
Yeah.
So the teachers must have been inordinately, bovinely stupid because we'd be doing geography and somebody would shout line and then there'd be a lot of sighing. And then in English, somebody would shout house and I'd pay them off. And we came to an accommodation in the end, really. I think I was quite bright. I think I was a bright kid, but in the end, the agreement was if you come to school, and they had there's either Val the secretary's office. My school had 2,400 kids in it. It was a huge, really pioneering early comprehensive in Sheffield. So they said I could bring a radio in at one point. So I'd sit in the cupboard at the back of Val's and listen to the radio towards the end.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you was at school?
That's a good question. That is a good question. Well, okay. Well, like most, I certainly knew what I didn't want to be. Hmm. That's for sure. I felt like I had to protect what I wanted to be. And that thing I said before, I fucking adore reading English. I used to be livid. I couldn't understand why we were having English lessons. I was thinking, So I knew that I wanted to be an artist of some description, but the template of masculinity I grew up with, you were defined by graft and stoicism and and all those things. I mean, again, it's a line of point. I did get a funny bone instead of a backbone. I just knew, and the pack sort of sniffed me out as well. So I felt like I've had no choice really in the way that my life's gone. I felt vocational that it would be. It had to be some version of this. I could paint a little, I can play music a little. I've always been able to write. That just felt natural to me. So, yeah, I didn't know exactly. I think I've got a memory, but it's lost in the mist of time now. But I do remember saying to them I wanted to be an actor. So, and they said, here's a job interview for a buffer. which was somebody who polishes spoons. So I thought there was a bit of a discrepancy between what I'd asked for and what I was sent for. I don't think I really knew. I just sort of think that life teaches you how to live it, doesn't it, really? And I sort of, I'm odd. I'm an odd combination of different things, but...
Was you confident?
Oh, probably about all the wrong things, yeah. Probably ludicrously confident about all the things I was fucking... The great questions, and I don't want to just give you pat answers for the sake of answering. I don't really know if I was confident or not confident, or I just I've always been very much. I'm sure you'll get this. I've always been very much myself. Do you know what I mean? I didn't look for validation from others, and I would. I'd go out clubbing on my own without a thought to how it might appear or a need for. I think it was.
There's a huge confidence in that, Tony. There's a huge confidence in that. The thought of going to a club on your own, I could not.
Yeah. I think it's sort of when people ask you questions that you start to. Well, then you start to realise what you think, what you know, and I could see how that would seem hugely confident, but I don't feel like I've been anything other than myself. So I don't think so. I mean, you could sort of say people said, "Oh, I think you're brave for being," you know, going. I've not felt like I've had any choice. So. And the other, that thing about going out, it's interesting because Richard Hall is one of my closest and dearest friends. I love the fucking bones of him, and thankfully it's reciprocated. But
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
We talked about early years, and we, it turns out there was a club called The Limit in the Sheffield that that our tribe would gravitate to, and it turns out we'd be at the same gigs at the same time alone. You know, we were that kid running the gauntlet of the 10-to-1 bus home in Sheffield with dyed hair and plastic shoes. You know, he had to be able to scrap. So yeah. So confident is difficult for me to answer. I guess it could be. Yeah, I suppose. I think certainly when I got the opportunity to, when Ken Loach picked me to be in the film, but I think that's the confidence of youth, you know, because there's no thought of consequences.
Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor. Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. You've chosen a very, very sought-after and difficult industry to work within. So confidence aside, would you say you're quite driven?
No. No, I'm not driven. I'm not driven in... I think it's probably fear of... I think it's probably fear. I don't know. I think it's probably fear of being misrepresented, because I do appear one way, and I've got some weight about me, and I'm quite I've not felt ambitious in that sense, but it's difficult for me to unpick all this, to be honest with you. I think the final mystery is always yourself.
Sure.
Really. I think it's easy to give answers about yourself. I think that as you can tell by the over-talking, I want to be heard, and I want to leave something behind me with some value.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to leave something behind me with some value.
Well, I'm going to pick back up on that in a moment, but it's going to be the last song in the kind of formative years for Track 4, and I'm going to ask you the first record you remember buying from a record shop.
Oh, that was Waiting for My Man.
Was it? Oh, sorry, have I doubled?
You're right. First record I bought from a record shop was an 8-track stereo, and it was the Stones. It was a Rolling Stones, and it was an 8-track stereo, and it had The Last Time on it, amongst others. Again, I sort of went and looked at that album, started thinking, which one of these am I going to say? But I think, it was an 8-track stereo. We had a Cortina PWB 717K, a brown one. Brown one, and my dad, the exhaust had come off it, and I tell the kids on where I lived that he'd had it race tuned, when in fact it just didn't have an exhaust on it. And that was going to the moon when he said, I've got an 8-track stereo in the car, and you can put that in. So I bought the Rolling Stones and an 8-track, and it was The Last Time, and that couldn't get it loud enough,
Tell me about your relationship with the record shop growing up.
Okay, so I was brought up in, a few places, but Hillsborough, where the football ground is in Sheffield, and there was... Now, at that time, the big supermarket sold records. So I ordered, Bowie, TVC 15, I ordered that. Would that be Low album? Can't remember. Low and Heroes, I think I ordered from the supermarket. But there's a little record shop at Hillsborough Corner, and I bought... Four Tops. Just Walk Away, Renee.
Oh, what a record.
I bought that, Because you don't know as a child that you're supposed to, you know what I mean, being a... So I bought that, and I bought Chu Wei Army or something, I think, when I first heard that. That shop, I don't want to overdo it, but that was a portal. That was Mr. Ben. That was Mr. Ben, and it was, and I had... I've never had any work in the act. I'm a lazy fuck. But I did kind of eventually see that that record shop persuaded me a paper round was worth it. And I'd go down, the bus was 2p down Hillsborough, and I'd go down and I'd save up enough to, I think I said earlier, to get there and to get in that shop. Then I'd have to buy, and you've already gathered, I'd have to buy one song. I'd get there at 10, I'd be out at 2. I'd just be, and you could listen to them in Sheffield City Centre. There was a place called Wilson and Peck, and you could go, and also there was Dial-A-Disc. I don't know if other guests have talked about that. So Dial-A-Disc, you could just ring up from home and listen to. So I just remember listening to the Pistols for like 4 hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then Wilson and Peck, I'd go into town, I'd catch the bus, because you can go in there and just listen to albums in a booth. So do that. The record shop at Hillsborough, I don't think it was particularly long-lived, but that, I can, I've got a full sense memory of it. It had a bell on the door, I can tell you the carpet, I can see, I know the size of it, and there was a kid in there who had a kind of contrived indifference. It was just kind of like that. And then there was an older fella who was in there, and he absolutely fucking loved every piece of music that he played. So, yeah. And then I moved to Manchester. Moved over to Manchester in my early 20s, and I'd spent a lot of time buying Northern stuff in Manchester. So, yeah.
You touched on Gary Newman a moment ago then. The movements in Sheffield music in the sort of very early 80s, did that impact on you at all?
Yeah, well, I was kind of around all that. I was around ABC and Heaven 17, and we're all of an age. We were all sort of there, and I was picked for a second lead part in a film by Ken Loach in 1981, so... I was around that, and there is a chef. I'm sure every town has it, but there is a Sheffield sensibility. There is a sharper Sheffield. I was around that. It moved. There's a place called the Crazy Daisy. I mean, it's like the fucking Wild West. And then there was but the Limit Club was a place, I think, where I spent most of my time, and I'd see Martin Fry out there. I'd see Human League. The girls from Human League had been the. In fact, I'm pretty sure that it's Suzanne in it and Joanne. I'm sure they were. Well, I know for a fact that they used to be dancing in the Crazy Daisy, and that was open in the day as well. Used to go in there in the daytime. As well, yeah, and I had a job as a truck mechanic. It was fucking disastrous. I'm absolutely fucking disastrous. And I think we had 2 weeks' holiday, so I said to them, can I have every Friday afternoon off for my holidays instead of having holidays? And that's what I'd do. So I'd finish work at 12 o'clock and I'd get on the bus and I'd go down to the Daisy and I'd have a dance and some cider.
Well, talking about dancing, for track 5, I'm going to ask you for the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing, please.
Okay, so this has been the easiest, not because there's not 1,000 other contenders, because there are, and I love them all, but this is so deep in me, this song, that it's The Bottle, Gil Scott Heron. So Gil's got another one, it's Dust. I've danced to that, the Bottle, in just about every major European country, in the States, and I've danced drunk and sober, and it's one of that I can't. Everything is just, there's I love Gil. I loved, I fucking loved him. I saw him live a few times, saw him in the States, saw him here. And there's, it's very difficult for me to explain, but there was an almost impossible sophistication and glamour about him, because I lived in those grey, grasping, grim northern industrial streets, and then there was Gil Scott Heron with this fucking flow, the flow of it, the so yeah, Gil Scott Heron, the bottle, every time, absolutely, and it didn't matter whatever else was going on. So yeah, I'd say that'd be my these. There's loads of other clubbing tunes from different genres and times and places that I could fill another 10 shows with, but there was no way that wasn't going to be him.
And let's not overlook that could easily have been number one. What a fuck off intro that song's got.
Absolutely. But it could have been, to be honest with you, it could have been, because it's got, it answers any questions about music for me. Just the intro, it's believe it or not, my Sheffield accent's pretty much gone. I've just got a sort of generic northern accent now. I don't have the full. When I go back to Sheffield, there's different sounds, Sheffield sounds, but the dance floors as a youth that I had, Hermes going, uno, dos, tres, cuatro, and legging it to get on there.
I just
loved it. There's a swirling beauty to that song. Love it.
There is an absolute swirling beauty about that. It's just, it's an incredible record, and shockingly, no one's ever picked that to this point. And
are shitting me.
We're over 300 episodes in, and no one's closed the bottle. So
then I'm going to re-look at Scroobius then as a potential friend. I can't believe it.
What a great record it is.
Okay, well, yeah, if anybody's out there listening that don't know it, immediately make your way.
Do it.
To Gil and take a listen. Fantastic.
Well, let's take you home for track six, and I'm going to ask you to tell me a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Okay, so there's two elements I'm keen to. One is I could have picked something by Paul Heaton, who I regard as a friend, and Paul's scored music for my work before. He's wrote original music for me for things that I've written, and fabulous songwriter, an extraordinary lyricist, a fucking extraordinary, and a beautiful plaintive voice, I think.
Talk about Paul Heaton briefly, though, because like, he doesn't get mentioned enough on this podcast, and I think he's one of the greatest songwriters this country's produced. I think
one of our greatest songwriters of all time. Yeah. I wrote a series called Shed Town for Radio 4, which was a sort of 11:30 slot, and the beauty of radio is it really was the last bastion of free speech. You got left alone. There was no committees trying to tell you what you wanted to talk about. And because it was an 11:30 slot, it was tucked away. And I asked Paul to write the music to that and the song, the title song to that. And every line.
Yeah.
Every line you'd want to quote, you'd want to have that on your tongue. I've just been listening earlier to
Let Love Speak Up Itself.
Let Speak For Itself.
Hanging From a Cleaver, that fucking line.
Absolutely, mate. Well, I just watched him. There's a live performance, I don't know where it is, that the main thing about the performance is I want to kill the crowd because they just fucking... they're all busy trying to be funny and shout stuff out. But Paul says on stage, Paul said on stage, this is the first time we're going to sing this since I've got my confidence back, because he lost his confidence. And he sang Let Love Speak, and it is just Jackie's with him, Jackie Abbott's with him. And again, it's on YouTube. You can go and see it. And it's sort of like all great art, it just becomes something else and it becomes transcendent. And it is, the lyrics are beautiful. And what I, the commonality that I have is I like people who fucking mean it.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, I don't even have to necessarily agree with it, but I like people who mean it.
Yeah.
And he means it.
Yeah.
And also there's real nuance in Paul's writing, and there's, and he wears his intelligence lightly. His emotional intelligence, I think, is immense, but he's no show off.
Yeah.
But yeah, just beautiful. Just absolutely beautiful. However, I
remember seeing him on, there was a music show called, was it called Rapido or something like that?
Yes.
Like, on BBC Two in the very the late 80s, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it was early days of The Beautiful South, and he was singing Lean On Me.
Yes.
And I'd read, because of the song that he'd done where he says back to bed, back to reality, that Soul to Soul had tried to sue him or something.
Wow.
And had said that, like, you know, he didn't have soul or something like that. And I just think, fuck off, mate. Like, you have a little listen to that, mate.
Yeah,
He's got more soul in his little finger, mate. It's unbelievable, his voice.
Yes.
Like, so underrated.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't. He's the real thing, and he's maintained it as well. He's not, you know, he's throughout all the various iterations of his career. But I didn't pick Paul, and the only reason I didn't pick Paul is to go for the love of my life, which is my fucking darling friend Richard, who I absolutely fucking adore. And if anybody wants to seek it out, there's a thing called Only Artists on Radio 4, and they ask people to pick an artist that they want to interview. So Richard picked me and we spoke, and then I picked Jim. And but that chat I had with Richard is one of the few things that I'm pleased with, because I'm not pleased with anything that I do, but that was a genuine... So I picked Richard Hawley because I had to pick Richard Hawley, and underrated doesn't begin to describe what I think about Richard, because I know, as his friend, I know what the lyrics mean, and they mean a lot more than... So you can say Richard's on a lot of different levels. We are shaped by the same winds, he and I. We are from the same place at the same time, and we're both hiding up trees, you know. And I could have, if you don't mind, I'm going to pick two. One for the obvious reason. I'm going to pick Funny Cow, which is a song that he wrote for my film Funny Cow. So I've told this story 1,000 times, but it's still true and still beautiful. I'd written Funny Cow, and a Funny Cow is essentially, it's me in a red dress, really. It's got it's my memories of the world that I grew up in. And so I rang Richard, and it was Saturday afternoon. And I don't know if you met Richard, but he's very, you just never, he's very, you know, he's like, all right, quiet. So I said, yeah, I've got, he said, what's it about, Tony? And I said, well, it's about, you know, the streets of Sheffield and the what it meant to be a bit different at that time. And I got about 3 or 4 lines out, can't remember what I said. And he went, oh, okay, all right. And he went, and then he rang me. That was Saturday. He rang me Sunday seaside, and he won't mind me saying it was in drink. He had a glass or 10. And he said, I've got listen. And he sang it down the phone to me. And in that moment, I thought, I'm either going to pack it in, I'm either going to just stop trying to express myself, because I can't do that. Because he said everything I wanted to say in that film, he said it in 2 minutes with no fuss, just seemingly effortless. Yeah. It isn't, but seemingly effortless. because he knows what to say and what not to say. And I thought, and I genuinely thought, I just don't know whether, oh, I'm just going to try and get better. And I took that path. So funny cow, but that's just about the most personal piece of music. And then the other one, because I just can't not mention it, he wrote a song called Vicar's Road, which is just about his chat. It's a little known song. It's not one of the bigger well known ones. I don't think he plays it that often live. But it's just about it's about his childhood in Sheffield and the pop, I don't know if you'd have this, but we had the pop van used to come round selling lemonade and
yeah, of course.
Right. And it was run by dodgy lads just out of prison with swallows on their hands, and they'd sell pops here. And so that's such an evocative song for me. So I'm picking Funny Cow by Richard Hawley, but yeah, it could have been.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Any one of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Richard Hawley, I wouldn't know where to start. I mean, I was lucky way back in the 90s, my band played quite a few shows with the Long Pigs. And yeah. So I did get to meet him a fair few times, but that was a long time ago. And he was an absolute joy, was my recollection of that. And then to see the stuff that obviously then went and done as himself and the stuff he's done with Pulp, it's like, you know, that's there's a serious body of work there.
Yeah, a serious body of work. And he's a muso's muse as well. I mean, it's that thing of, it's strange because a lot of my mates are sort of well-known and stuff, and I do everything I can not to watch the work. I don't want to corrupt our friendship by, but Rich is one of the. I'll hopefully get to see him next week at some point. But we'll go for a drink together. We'll go back to his house and he'll pick his guitar or he'll sit in the pub and sing to me. He'll just sit in the pub and sing the most fucking heartbreakingly beautiful songs you've ever. And then said, "Do you want another?" And I'll be just. It's like a knife attack. I mean, it smashes me to pieces. And so, I adore him, and I think he's a towering figure.
I mentioned a while ago, I wanted to pick back up on Drive, and I know when I spoke to Maxine, I'm sure she said it took a while to kind of get Funny Cow, like
10 years.
Yeah. So to get that over the line with the cast that's in that film and it to look and sound and be as beautiful as that film was, that's got to take Drive, Tony, surely.
Well, no, yeah, but somebody else's, not mine. See, that's it. See, I gave it to... So I, at that point in my life, I think I'd just started... What happened to me was I was a little soap sud in Aberdale for a lot of years, and then I was asked to leave and I left, and so I stayed in and smoked weed and wrote for 3-4 years, just lost years. I couldn't get arrested. I didn't have the right energy to get in the business. I was full of lots of things, but I wrote, and I'm still now finding, see, I wrote poetry and I wrote films and I wrote plays and I wrote, but with no thought of any of showing them to anybody. That wasn't so. So I met Maxine. We worked together on and I met Paddy at the same time. So that is the cast is fortunately my mates. So that's the lucky thing. I just asked my mates. So "Oh, I love and love me back if they do it." And they all said yes, and they did all do it. You know, including Richard, Stevie Graham came and did it, and Maxine did it, and John Bish came and did it. So
incredible cameo from Jim as well.
Jim was, and he's such that you see Jim's. I mean, one of my closest friends. I've just wrote something for me and him that's coming out in the next couple of weeks. Actually, recorded down in Brighton at the beginning of the year. So he and I collaborate together. But yeah, so I'd wrote Funny Cow, and it was I'm going to self-sabotage if I say it so much, but it was seen by the people who was purportedly support the British film industry, and I was told there was no love in it, which is like saying there's no soul in Paul Heath, and there's it's full of fucking love. It's full of love can get corrupted and changed into many different things. There was no, they said, you know, commercially it's not going to be, and all that. So I gave it to a kid called Kevin Proctor, who was just, I think he was a production assistant on Sherlock, when I did Sherlock. And I'd written something else, and he said, "Could I take a look at anything you wrote?" And I gave him that. I write pen and paper, and I wrote Funny Cow in like 2.5 hours, and I gave it him, and he was on one of those Megabus, that thing. So he was on one of those anyway, and he rang me and said in bits, and he said, "We'll get this made." And then there were so many false dawns, and there were so many people wanting to see. I won't, for better or worse, and I'm not, it's just, I won't compromise on what I'm right. It just seems fucking pointless. It seems the ultimately most pointless thing you can do is to live the life that I have, that with no certainty, and then just hand it over. So we got money, then the money, but they wanted this person to be in it and that person to be in it, and then this person, then. We just felt like it was going to happen so many times, and then didn't happen. And then eventually I went to a meeting with a guy who was he'd just signed the deal for Peppa Pig for like 1.4 billion or whatever. And I was the next meeting he had, and he was he's about my age. And he said, "I've just signed the deal for Peppa Pig, but, which is great for us, you know, it's great, but it's not what I got into it for. I got into it for stuff like this." He said, I can't give you," and this was a distributor, he said, "I'll give you," and he gave us a couple hundred grand, and that was it. So then we got 232 private investors. A meat magnate from Margate gave us 50 grand. This one gave us, and it was like that, we did it by the skin of our teeth. We just started shooting. You know, I think it's fair to say that some of the cast weren't quite aware how, you know, we were living from hand to mouth. We were supported by people that I'll never forget. Who just sort of didn't need some, had a little chance of getting the money back, but gave us the dough. And then I found Adrian Shergold, who directed it for me, and that's, I met him and I literally knew within a minute that he was going to be doing it, because he got it and he made it, and we got it made. But Maxine probably told you, it wasn't the day that we got in the car to start shooting. Even then I was, it sounds ludicrous, but even then I was thinking, I wasn't absolutely sure we were going to arrive on a film set. You know, but yeah, and then it got made, and then it's out in the world, and yeah.
And for anyone listening that hasn't seen that, like I can't recommend that enough. You know, I'm not sitting here blowing smoke up your ass, Tony. It's a fucking incredible film. I absolutely blew me away when I saw that, mate. And
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's your turn now to blow someone else away now. And for the last track, it's a song that many people may not know that you want them to hear.
Right. Now, so now this is... There's well, you can't see. This is, and again, I can't. Okay, I think I've settled on. Even now, I want to change it. I think I settled on Scott Walker. It's Raining Today. There's a connection there with Richard and Scott as well. Richard did while Scott was alive. Richard did the tribute at the Royal Albert Hall for him. And it was at the time that Funny Cow was out. So he and I were in town together and we went to the premiere of Funny Cow. And then a couple of nights later, he went and sang at the Royal Albert Hall and sang It's Raining, the Scott Walker song. And I just, it's probably too well known to recommend to people. People probably do know the music of Scott Walker, but... I've got honourable. I mean, there's a million. I've just been sitting here now. I've got Restless Hours, Love Supreme. I've got Ode to St. Anthony by Mike Garry, Sweet Thing by Van Morrison, anything by Jake Thackeray, Lloyd Cole. I heard the other day, Are You Ready to Be Heartbroken? Chick Corea, The Divide, I Am Clute, These Days Are Mine. There's a million.
Let's talk I Am Clute. Because, again, there's a few bands that never, ever get mentioned on this podcast. I went and saw I Am Clue at this tiny little venue in a place called Harlow, down where I live. I went in there, and because someone had said there's a band coming down. They're Mancunian, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's John, isn't it? Is it John Bramwell, the singer? Mate. He walked out. Put his foot on an empty beer crate with his guitar, and he opened. And the minute I heard, is it? There's blood on your legs. I love you. It was Twist.
Yes.
And I was like, "What the hell is this?" And the second track he played was a track called Morning Rain.
Yep.
And then was it 96 TVs? I can't think what it was called. Oh, yep. I'd never seen anything like it. Just this three-piece blew my socks off.
If you listen to this, so I use music in everything that I can. So my series, Radio 4 series, Shedtown, I did three of them. So Paul Heaton scored it, and then Richard Hawley put Richard stuff in it, The Ocean, and As the Dawn Breaks, and I Am Clue. I put in it. This is the thing. I think this is feels like the biggest responsibility of all to introduce somebody to a piece of music that you love. But any of those and Sweet Thing. The thing that I was just telling you about. I want people to listen out for it. So I've got a podcast coming out called Curl Up and DI, which is a. It sounds horrendous. Hopefully, I've pulled it off. We'll see. It's you know those terrible daytime TV things that used to run in the '80s. Where there was one called Rosemary and Thyme, where they were gardeners and they helped out the police with murders.
Yeah.
So I've got that set in a northern seaside town called Curlup and DI, and I've got Jim Moyer, Vic, and Morgana.
Oh, Robinson, wow!
As hairdressers. Who helped Catherine Kelly and Mark Benson, who are the local murder cops, and they're experiencing 200 murders a day. And at the end of it's a bit of a, it's a kind of a, it starts off, it's silly, and I don't think many people will get past episode two because it's fucking annoying. But if you can get past that, I've deliberately done that. It's a deliberate thing with that, but it's a homage to Camus, who has been a sort of. I am essentially an absurdist. I think life's absurd, and the chase that's trying to find meaning in life is absurd, but we still try. And at the end of each episode, I got the cast burst into song. They would go down to the beach and sing that, and hopefully it's worth. By the end, it starts off silly, and at the end, I cut your throat, and I get them to sing "Sweet Thing" by Van Morrison, and I just forgot how. Fucking beautifully intricate a song that is as well. Just Yeah. And he was a young man as well when he wrote it.
Recorded that album, I think, in 3 days.
Yeah, and he was like 23, I think, or something. It was in New York, and he just pitched up with his players. And the only thing that I do remember about that is I think it was New York. It might not have been. Don't matter. I think he was 23. That don't matter. But I do know that he said to the people that were playing with him, they were asking questions of him, and he said, just fucking play what's inside you.
Well,
and I, yeah.
That's mad you say that, right? Because I've got a Sheffield story, and maybe you'll know this guy. I don't know. But in the mid-90s, my band was playing, and we played Under the Boardwalk.
I'd gone by then.
And there was a venue downstairs, and it had, if I remember rightly, painted on the walls was lots of kind of Sheffield musicians.
Right.
And it was like an acoustic thing. Something had happened upstairs, and we had to play downstairs and was asked if we could play acoustic. And I wanted to play Cypress Avenue.
Yeah.
And the guy that run the night come out, who was this kind of promoter in the basement of this venue in Sheffield, and he played guitar on Astral Weeks. Whether he was just... and he played that with us. He was either telling us the most elaborate, brilliant lie ever.
I'd have blown up. I'd have fucking literally blown up. Wow.
And it blew my mind. And I was like, holy shit. Like, this guy played... Yeah. I mean, I hope it wasn't an elaborate lie. He seemed pretty genuine. But,
yeah, well, in my mind, it's not. I've completely taken that story, and it is true. Yeah, no, that's the. So I don't get impressed by. I don't get impressed by people that I meet. I'm not just not that. I don't watch TV. I don't watch stuff. I'm not that way. I'm not that way inclined. But if it's an artist, or if it's an artist,
yeah,
I'm a giddy kipper. Yeah, that would have blown me away. But anyway, I picked Scott Walker because he took me down the sort of that rabbit hole, and I went to Jacques Brel and all that. And then I found Jake Thackeray, who I don't know if people know, but Jake Thackeray was, he used to be in the Astor Ranson show in the 70s. This is some sort of novelty, but he's a beautiful, complex sort of... French in that Jacques Brel tradition, yeah. But he's from Leeds,
right?
And he's got if anybody wants to, I should definitely search Jake Thackeray's stuff out. It's just a beautiful juxtaposition. He sings about the Dales and the northern without the saccharine sort of, you know. So I'll settle for Scott Walker, but it could be I want to introduce everybody to everything.
Well, we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast, so we'll add some of these honorable mentions in as
fantastic.
Well,
Tony, thank
so
you.
People can get stuck in.
Fantastic,
mate. I sent you a message on Instagram last week. In the off chance you might read it and say yes, and you come back straight away, and it's been an absolute joy, honestly, Tony.
Yeah, you too, brother.
Thanks loads, mate. It's been so nice talking records with you.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm sorry I've bailed on a bit, but it's...
Not at all, mate. Not at all.
It's in me. It's in me. Thank you so much.
Talking music, mate, I could go on for hours. Yeah. Thank you so much, mate.
Thank you, brother. Lovely to meet you.
There you go. Oh, mate. What a wonderful human. Just... I love it when, what you couldn't see was literally he looked in pain when he had to actually commit and say one. And that's unquestionable passion right there. And it was lovely. Just the insight into, you know, how much artistry, you know, cuts deep with him is a lovely thing to hear. And it's the reason I set this podcast up was to have chats like that. So thanks again to Tony. And thanks to you lot for listening. Tell your mates about this pod and give us a like, love, or a share or a retweet or whatever you want to do over on the socials. I'm back next time. In the meantime, anything else you need to know about the podcast, offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. is Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.